You are listening to the Rainmakers Power Hour. Join your hosts, Wendy Butler, Leanne Nguyen, and Macy Nelson, as they interview the most successful entrepreneurs from around the world who are sharing their proven strategies to help take your business to the next level.
Thank you, Credit. And before we get started, I do want to give a big shout out to our sponsors who are here in the audience. Ollie Bigler of Smarter Aircraft, the next generation in private jet aviation investment. And also, you can find them at smarteraircraft.com. And also, Rhett Butler with William & Harry, luxury brand exotic golf shoes. You can find them at williamandharry.com. So thank you guys for sponsoring us. We appreciate you. So we want to welcome our guest tonight, Nadib Akhtar, and otherwise known as Nitty. So let me just give you, and if you don't know Nitty, you have got a lot of learning to do. He has a bachelor's degree from Baylor, where he studied finance and chemistry, 15 years plus experience as an entrepreneur and investment banker, including a decade in mergers and acquisitions. He was a consultant for Cardone Ventures for a few years, founder and managing partner of Excite Capital, a trading firm focused on executing precise, probabilistic, AI-driven trading strategies that predict market movements. And that's a mouthful. We're going to definitely go into a deep dive with that with you, Nitty. He is also the co-founder of CrowdPoint Technologies, pioneering quantum as a service. Nitty recently did a TED Talk, which we're excited about. And also, he is a newly recently married to his wife, Jessica.
Macy, you're doing better. Mic is
welcome to the show, Nitty. We're excited to have you today.
Thank you, Wendy. It's a pleasure to be on.
So one of the first things that I have to ask, you get your degree in finance, and then you end up in quantum years later. Were you always an entrepreneur? Did you always have that spirit, even in college? Or was this something that was on your radar?
It probably started in elementary school, to be honest. My entrepreneurial journey started in, probably in recess, when I convinced my parents to take me to the wholesale store and buy candy bars and keychains and whatever I could find and sell them to my friends at recess. So I did that then. And in high school, I made screen printed t-shirts and sold them at football games and in the commons area. That's where it started.
And then I remember talking to you and your brother, and you guys started your own business, right, when you were in college. And tell us about that. You were already starting businesses even before you graduated.
Yeah, so I'll tell you, we grew up in a pretty entrepreneurial family. My dad was an entrepreneur, our uncle was an entrepreneur. I had this idea that I was going to go to med school. And the crazy idea was that the Baylor ran scholarship, and scholarships were only going to last 4 years and only covered so much of college expenses. And the idea was, I heard from some upperclassmen when I moved to Waco and moved into Baylor's campus, I had heard that there were some upperclassmen that owned a hookah bar near campus, and that's how it was a very successful business, and that's how they made tuition. And I remembered we had a buddy from Dallas, which is where my brother and I grew up. He had said that put in some money in a hookah bar and did very well with it. So I called my brother and I said, dude, we should open a hookah bar. Now, mind you, neither of us smoked or drank at the time. We grew up in a pretty Southern Baptist, almost borderline Pentecostal family. So partying or drinking, smoking was just unheard of, right? And that was the idea, is opening a hookah bar just to pay for med school tuition for me and law school tuition for my brother. We did open that business. I was 19 when we opened our first bar. That bar crashed and burned inside of 6 months. We were subleased inside of an existing bar in Dallas. We did not open in Waco. We didn't lose too much money. Only several grand. We didn't give up on the dream. We found a Target, which was this building that we fell in love with in downtown Dallas. It was 1401 Main Street in downtown Dallas. The block was the geographic center of Dallas. And that was our Target. We were going to open a bar there. It took us a little over a year, but we ended up opening our first hard bar called the One-Eyed Penguin. And we opened in 2009. That bar is still open today. We sold after several years. I was 20 when we opened the bar. I wasn't even legally allowed to drink. My brother was older. He was a few months past 21, so got the liquor license, but we opened.
So, an entrepreneur really early on, I love it. Macy, I know you are dying to ask some questions. Why don't you get started?
Yes, can you hear me? I was just having some sound issues when you were speaking.
We
Can
hear
you
you
guys
loud
hear
and clear.
me?
Yes.
I want to get into the good stuff. So, obviously, you're an entrepreneur. Your background is investment banking. How did you go from investment banking to using quantum AI? That seems like a big leap. Obviously, you're a risk taker. But how did you make that leap from investment banking to working in the quantum space?
Yeah, that's a great question. And it's hard to answer with a direct statement. There wasn't one event that inspired this impetus to jump into technology. I was always a student and a fan of tech. I was the person taking apart devices when back in the early 2000s that would be taking desktops apart, laptops apart, cell phone components, you name it. That was always me, although I was never an engineer. Took a number of years of computer science, business technology classes, database classes, you name it. So always had an appreciation and affinity for technology. I was a pretty shitty programmer, had a deep understanding for the utilization and value optimization of technology, especially in mergers and acquisitions. And so that was kind of like my shtick in being an investment banker, is I would handle all of our health tech deals, as well as I ended up being chief operating officer of the firm. Actually met, my brother introduced me to a guest at our bar, the One-Eyed Penguin. He gave me an internship while I was in university. I ended up COO there. And so I was thrust into helping run the firm and handling all the tech, as well as advising tech clients. That's when I started to pick up consulting engagements as well, even outside of my M&A scope. So I worked with startup companies that were raising capital, that were positioning their corporate strategy. So that was what I did. In investment banking, especially when you're really good at it and creative, you know how to filter the noise and find the optimal story for market positioning, for raising capital, for sales,
Sales,
building your
building
revenue
your revenue.
model.
Someone back.
Okay. Can you hear me fine? Okay.
Yes.
Okay, good. And so that's how I fell into technology. One of the clients that I had advised is now my brother and I's business partner. His name is Sean Bren. I helped him when he was exiting a big data company. There's a company called Tigio that bought that. It was a defense tech company. I was just a sounding board, helped him as a founder. He was a guest at one of my brother's restaurants, and we hit it off, became really good friends. That kind of catapulted me into doing more and more tech engagements when Sean and my brother teamed up to launch CrowdPoint, our advanced software development company. That's when we got into building infrastructure for quantum, artificial intelligence, the Web3, you name it. Part of what makes our ecosystem of companies so unique is how we draw parallels from the capital markets and finance industries with the notion of custodianship. And without getting into the thick of how our software works, we've, in particular, have developed a really advanced software solution to deliver a next-gen custodian solution for the zeros and ones and Electron. Just like you would have parallels in the banking system, when you have a really efficient custodian where you could deliver things like settlement upon delivery, you could create margin leverage, transparency, information exchange, et cetera, for your assets held by a custodian. We did the same in a decentralized, highly secure, highly scalable, very energy efficient manner. And that's what we did with going quantum with the zeros and ones. Like when you kind of reach threshold at wherever the state of technology is, how do you make it more efficient? You could either buy and sell or build new technology. We threw everything out the window and started from ground up. We went first principles and said that we need to come up with a better way to hold the zeros and ones and represent them in motion. That's how I fell into tech. I took parallels and brought them to tech.
I'm geeking out right now.
Good, good.
I love But what I loved is you basically took a passion and a hobby and monetized.
Yes.
I love that. So many people, you know, the saying goes, if you find something you love and you make money on it, you never work a day in your life. I love it. So that's how you got Excite Capital focused in the quantum AI direction. And what I find interesting is you're now applying that to Wall Street. Can you walk us through how that works?
I'll tell you honestly, idea to launch Excite was really when we're building deep tech infrastructure and there is no analog to point to, it's really difficult to have people understand the near-term vision and execution path for raising capital. I kept facing this issue in CrowdPoint. One thing that was to our own detriment, we were pretty shitty early on in telling our story. We didn't know if we were to call ourselves a cloud company, a Web3 company, a decentralized e-commerce company. We didn't have a North Star. Took us a while to do, and it kind of hit me in early 2024. I get a call from our chief scientist, a gentleman named Dr. Wolf Cohn, luminary in the AI and optimal control theory space. He calls me and he says, I just got a call from General So-and-so. This paper I wrote on a quantum chip just got declassified. And now the IP is reassigned to us. I said, oh, beautiful. I hang up and I think, man, this is crazy. Now we're a quantum chip company. We're going to be manufacturing hardware. And I'm just thinking, how the heck am I going to like, yeah, it's a cool opportunity. I don't want to lose it. And we had a call from one of the big tech companies as well that wanted to hire us to consult them on building a quantum chip. And I turned down the money. It was a lot of money. It was like $40 million. We turned that down because we wouldn't own the IP. What I did, because I had two clients that were non-tech clients, I was consulting them on financial strategy, on their M&A, et cetera. They had said, oh, we want you to be part of our private equity fund, right? Or our venture fund. Both of them had kind of backed out and they hadn't launched their funds, but I was so excited. I'm like, oh, I'm going to be part of an investment fund. Maybe a little bit of it was spite. Maybe a little bit of it was necessity as well. It was like, if I keep trying to raise money for deep tech, I could do it. And so I thought, what if we just take intellectual property that we already have, like the algorithms that we have for our quant fund, we've been developing them for years. And then it was just shelved technology. And we've been talking for years about starting a fund or launching a product in partnership with one or two of these clients. And I thought, oh, great. Never did I imagine we'll be a fund manager. And so I had this idea that wouldn't escape my mind. Why don't we just start our own fund and pay for everything ourselves? And then we can keep building cool stuff and not have to raise money from anybody ever again. That is really the reason we started Excite. I was so tired of going to raise money for some really cool stuff that we've developed. I just thought, wouldn't it be badass if we just raised a fund and gave investors what they want, which is returns, and all the risk taking, we'll do it with our own money.
That's amazing. Well, I love it. Credit, were you about to say something? Sorry. Okay. Listen, I want to go into some of the cool algorithms that you're talking about, like data Hamiltonians and chattering. These are some terms that I've heard you talk about in your TED Talk and things like that. Can you explain to us in plain English for the rest of us that don't know about these quantum algorithms?
No problem. Before I do that, I just want to preface it with this really important statement. Most quant funds, and especially financial firms that use artificial intelligence in their trading strategy or even in their analysis, they use a regressive approach, which means that they look at past data and to operate under this assumption that the best way to predict tomorrow is by taking some average of the past. We don't believe that. There's a lot of very sound research and data to point to in 2025, in a day and age where markets are largely driven by bots and automation, and there's so much chaos and high-speed movement that averages and statistical correlations and past models, they just don't hold true on the long-term basis and at those high speeds. You'll win a little bit, but you won't win consistently, and you'll have to keep adjusting your strategy to keep up with the chaos of today's world. And so what we believe, and this is what I highlighted in my TED Talk, is we look beyond the roof. We're not driving just by looking at the past. We want to focus on the fun. Just a windshield.
Use this 1 second.
No problem.
Somebody.
I got it.
Thank you. I think you're muted there.
Now it's unmuted.
Okay. What the heck? You got me?
You'll just have to jump back. Rebutton.
Okay.
I had a little glitch there.
No worries. Okay, where was I? What we did is we threw all existing models out the window. And we built ground up. Very first principles, the very scientific method approach. We said that past models don't hold true at high speeds and at high volatility. They just don't. We're a high-frequency trading firm. So what we decided to do is build a apparatus that would just focus on present data, sense it, and synthesize that data very quickly in a manner that would allow us to extract intelligence from that real-time data. So that's what we call predicting the future. We're not really predicting the future. We're just shaping it by looking at the present data at high speeds and synthesizing. It is literally exactly like the human brain works. So cognition works in the same manner. You have, just like we do, we have some foundational knowledge. The accurate thing to say is we train on a few weeks of market data up till a certain point, like timestamp zero, and then we don't look at past data at all. From that point, we're only future predicting. That's how our models work. In your life, that's basically how it works. Like, you've learned over your lifetime certain life skills and certain things that say, all right, like, if you ever stuck your hand in fire when you were a kid, you know you're not to do that when you're older. I certainly stuck a coat hanger in a power socket, learned the hard way to not do that. So I did that when I was pretty young. What you don't do as an adult or as a human is, if you have a routine, you're not going to walk the same path at every single step exactly the way that you did it yesterday. You look at present conditions, you look at the weather, you'll say, all right, maybe I should wear a raincoat today because the weather's pretty bad. And so you'll sense the present and evolve your execution, your strategy accordingly. That's exactly what we built our algorithms to do, is just sense data in motion at high speed. We build our models with the market and we execute based on a rules-based strategy. A data Hamiltonian is a way for us to take a living map or living model of market dynamics. What we are not doing is modeling every single instrument or every single contract as an individual. We want to understand the behavior as a whole system and see how they all relate to each other in motion. Like, every single instrument that we have could be on its own trajectory, but it's still going to have an overall impact on the market. I'll explain. So a really good analogy to think of is when you're a traffic cam reporter flying in a helicopter and you're trying to understand, okay, where's the traffic jam going to build up? Where's the slowdown? Which route should people take? You're going to hover above this section of the highway and understand, okay, cars are slowing down this way. They're speeding up this way. Here's where things are flowing. You are mapping the trajectory of those cars in motion. That's exactly what we do. We look at price, volume, and time in the market, but we're not looking just at point deltas between those variables. What we are doing is we look at the trajectory of them. We look at the speed and acceleration of those variables in order to understand, okay, like that the price and volume is going in this curve at this fast. And if there's a slowdown, we understand, okay, things are slowing down, price or volume slowing down with one of these liquidity providers probably means it's a bad instrument, or it's an instrument that we should slow down on because the opportunity isn't there as much as it should be. Makes sense? And so we are sensing things in motion. Sensing is cool, but how do you decide which route is the best? This is where the probabilistic AI and quantum computing comes in. The whole idea of quantum computing is you have superposition. Like, you can calculate everything or millions and millions of possibilities at once in the market. In our model, it doesn't matter. You have certain rules. Like, you can't go outside of the bounds of regulators. You can't go outside of the contracts that we're allowed to trade. You can't go outside of certain risk parameters that we have. We have hard rules, soft rules, absolute rules. And so we ignore probabilities outside of those rule sets. We take a data Hamiltonian and then synthesize in a lab at really high speeds, like at microsecond speed. We'll come up with 1,000 or 10,000 different possible scenarios of what the market could look like based on our rules and the instruments that we have. If we're at timestamp one, If you go to timestamp 2, between this timestamp and this timestamp, there's a microsecond. But we're going to look at so many different possibilities. We're going to ignore the ones that are low probability, and we'll take the high probability ones. We'll take an average of that strategy, and that's what we execute.
Okay, you're pulling. I need a moment. All we care about is return on our money. This group, we're all about throwing haymakers. So what you're trying to say is you have an algorithm that you can get a better return on the money. And what you're doing, so I just want to make sure, because you've given me a lot, and I'm a trader, so I'm just soaking this in. You're not necessarily looking at like a 50 moving average, or you might be looking at a 10 moving average, but you're not taking volatility, delta, and thetas from the past. You're taking them from expirations in the future, putting that together in an algorithm, and that's spitting you out a formula, and it triggers a trade to get a higher return on the money.
Yes.
What did I think of that? That is genius. Okay, so you're looking at delta. I mean, what do you think the percentage return on the money is? Have you benchmarked that from how predictive algorithms are now, from looking at your 50s and your 10s and even your 20s and your risk, you know, all the things chartists look at, right? Those algorithms that normal companies look at. And they do some future analysis, but what you're saying is you focus more on that. And we had the Marion brothers on here, and they were talking about anomalies and volume and things like that. So you're collecting all that data, and in microseconds, you're triggering trades. What percentage return are you getting better by doing that versus the more traditional model?
My lawyers would kill me for sharing it online, but I'll say that our returns and our fund performance is quite handsome. We would be one of those anomaly funds.
And how does how does all of the rainmakers on this?
And I did want to mention John Najarian is in the audience.
My brother John.
Hey, Tom.
Love John.
Now, John's one of my favorite people.
Yes, I don't know. At the moment, in the audience. And I did want to point out Nelson Apega, the creator of is here as well, talk tech and doing fundraising. He's doing all of that at the current time too. So anyway, just shout out to those guys, but go ahead.
Sure. Well, Macy, I've never heard anybody distill what Nitty is.
I'm going to use that, John. Use
quickly
it on the show.
That's amazing because you nailed it. His time frames are so short that most human beings can't get into the time frame that he is trading with that fund. But that doesn't mean you can't make a lot of money doing it. High frequency trading, if you looked at the returns of Virtu Financial folk or DRW or Spike or any of the big, you know, Citadel, any of the big guys that are doing high frequency trading, they're not doing the same thing, but they're trading about as fast as Nitty and his fund. You can certainly make an awful lot of money. It's just you're going to make an awful lot of trades, right, Nitty?
Yeah, we'll do a million a day more trades.
That's a million trades, folks.
Exactly, not $1 million. That would be a slow day.
Do we get in?
So I'll tell you that we had for a while thought to just keep our fund private, but we are opening up to outside investors. We are days away from launching our Genesis fund, our flagship fund, open to external investors. Excite Genesis is a 100% onshore fund. We are accepting accredited investors, so U.S. accredited investors. The threshold is minimum investment size is $1.1 million. Could be a million if you have a net worth of $2.2 or $2.5 million or more. But we'll just say $1.1 million is a minimum investment. That's not a random number. That's an SEC number of what accredited investors put in. In the past, we were only going to accept qualified purchasers, but we decided to open it up a bit to accredited investors, because of the high interest that we've gotten from my going on shows like this and talking about what we're doing. We'll start distributing our offering materials in probably 2 weeks or so. There's a link included in our chat or social room. I would invite anyone listening to this show to click that link and input your information, and then we'll send you information on our offering when it becomes available in a handful of days.
Yes, guys, you can click that link just above. It's pinned at the top of the page. I do know that we have some audience participants that would like to ask you some questions, Nitty. So if anyone is ready to talk, you can raise your hand, let's call on some people and get some
This is Red Butler. I just want to know, was this one of your highlights of your career when you were offered the William and Harry model career? Did that affect your personal life? Because I know your wife was probably upset with that. But John, how did you handle that Nitty was above you on the William and Harry model career?
Well, I'll tell you that Jess could not be more thrilled that I'm advancing my modeling career. She knows that I love the shoes, the William and Harry shoes. I have my white ones and I have the Python in black. I ordered two more for my business partners. Aaron Christensen has a pair and I got some for Jeff Hummel. I'm a big William and Harry fan. If you don't have those shoes, you got to get them.
Love
it. And your career, seriously though, we went out with you and women were going to throw themselves at you. I guess they knew who you were. We didn't realize what a big shot you were. How do you handle that in the public when you're out, especially with your brother? He barely made it through Harv. You're kind of like the big shot in the family now. Does that bother him and the sibling rivalry?
I think your brother might be in the audience.
Oh, that's awesome. I'll tell you that my brother is arguably my biggest champion. We have zero rivalry. It's all brotherhood, all partnership. I would not be where I am in life without him. And on the ladies' side, I think I've always been that for, I hear it from you.
Hold on, sir.
You're definitely unmuted.
Did it work?
Yeah, we hear you.
Hey. Oh, okay, good. There. You were saying, go ahead and finish your thought.
Yeah. Go on mute for a second while you're moving around. Yeah. So on the ladies' side, I'll tell you that I've always had a knack for having friends female. Probably because I love being a big brother. My brother's the oldest and I'm the middle child and our sister's 4 years younger than me. And she was best man number one on my wedding in January. E was best man number two. My other groomsman was Sarah, one of my cousins, and then Raul, another one of my cousins. I bring this up to say that on the ladies' side, I know Rhett is being a bit facetious. I have always been pure in my dynamics with the other sex, whether it's business conversation, party conversation, whatever. Like, if I'm going to be intentional about building a relationship, it's pure and intentional. When I met Jessica, my wife, I told her on our first date, she thought it was a business dinner. I'm like, screw that. This is not a business dinner. And she was playing hard to get. And I said, look, plenty of friends. I don't need any more friends. I want to be special in your life, romantically special in your life. And she's like, how could you say that with such confidence when you live in Miami and I live in London? And I said, no. I'll make it work. Trust me. If I were you, man, I would fight for you. And I did. And we did long distance for 3.5 years and got married in January, January 25th. While I'm saying, guy, girl, whatever floats your boat, if you're intentional about building a relationship in a pure and genuine way, they come to you. They literally come to you. That's the energy. That's the frequency that you put out into the universe. It's like you attract the energy that you put out. So that's what I always do. If I go out and I'm in charisma mode, that's when I meet cool ass people. And we always do.
Well, your wife's a lucky woman because she might be a little bit better looking than you and a little bit smarter, but 100%. She's very lucky.
Yeah. Much, much better looking than I am.
I know you were looking in the audience a little bit. What do we have? Who do you got next?
Gena with her hand raised up. Gena, did you want to chime in? And then Sal right afterward.
Yes. Well, thanks, Greta. Thanks, everybody. You are so funny. I think Jessica and Nidhi are both equally lucky.
Sweet. Thank you.
Yes. Nidhi, it's so good to see you. Grateful for your beautiful mind. Even though your wisdom teeth are completely out as of 5 hours ago, you're still inspired by your wisdom. It's incredible. If you could solve one real-world problem through quantum, what would it be and why would that matter to you personally?
I'd focus on solving energy intelligence. Here's what I mean by that. Our company, CrowdPoint, have been innovating in the space of leveraging and probabilistic future-predicting AI to manage how energy is distributed via the cloud. We've built software and components to go after a major crisis. Energy is a national security issue. With the advancement of hyperscaler data centers, gigafactories, solutions that people have is they think that we should just throw more energy at it.
let's build small modular reactors and, you know, magically the world's crisis is going to be solved. No, that's so silly. That's like saying that if you just work really hard, that you'll get your goals. Life doesn't work that way. I don't believe, I actually hate working hard. I end up working pretty hard, but I decided a number of years ago that I'm going to stop working hard and just work smart. And then quantum and AI, I'm like, no, I got to work intelligent. That's what we're doing with our quantum computing and the quantum approaches we have. The critical crisis that exists globally, it affects industries, sovereign decisions, investing, everything. If we do not focus as a society on saying that we need a more efficient, a more elegant approach towards solving the energy crisis, nothing else matters. We can't advance to the next levels of AI. We can't go quantum. You name it. You can't get efficiency if you don't solve the energy side. And so that's what we've been working on. And it's been core obsessions of my work within CrowdPoint for the last 6 years already, is focusing on leveraging our quantum computing arsenal and our AI infrastructure arsenal to solve the energy crisis. And so we're very excited that we're starting to roll out some major partnerships and products impacting space. We're able to because now a number of our, by the way, Macy, whether it's our quantum computing algorithms that we're using in our high-frequency trading or even the energy systems that we're talking about, the work that our team has developed is none of the stuff I'm talking about is new or unproven. We've built and deployed algorithms proven at global scale for 15 years or so. My team, my partner, prior versions of our tech have been deployed inside of the intelligence community, inside of Department of Defense, Department of Energy, and have been used very, very successfully. Our chief scientist and general partner, he was a technical head quant at Citi and used a very, you know, similar math approach 20 years ago, pre-Dodd-Frank, in running their high-frequency trading program, which was incredibly successful. And so we're confident in our ability to execute and do well by our investors and stakeholders.
Phenomenal. I have a question for you. Okay. Nidhi, I met you a few months ago in Miami. It was at a Epic Time.
Yes.
And I had won one of the speaker awards, and you were celebrating on stage. I don't know what that celebration was all about, whether it was your technology or position. Can you tell us about what exactly happened? We were partying right now, popping champagne and salsa dancing and all that. I just want to know what that celebration was all about. And my second question, if Trump administration asked you to join his team, because they bring great minds to influence what's going to happen in the century. So
I got an answer for you there.
Go ahead.
I got an answer for you there.
I saw the red.
There you go. That's my answer.
Tell us what role you would play.
Whatever he wants.
Correct.
I'll be golf caddy if I have to.
Sorry, this is an audio, not visual. Can you describe for the audio listeners what exactly you did? I think they would have FOMO.
So maybe when...
He's saying Daddy Trump is ready to rock and roll with us.
So when Gina, I put on my fire engine red mega hat to answer one of the questions.
And I'm not on Chatter. And you're seeing it on another platform. You are missing it. Get Chatter today. Join us next week. Get on Chatter. This is the only way you could be a part of the conversation in the mix. Face-to-face, if you will. So definitely take this opportunity to download Chatter and get on for next week.
Yeah, absolutely. You have to. I want to answer your other questions. We had consummated at that time a M&A transaction that was quite good for our company. Interestingly enough, we actually bought a portion of the assets that we had exited at that time, but which is good. We have a much better vision of how to execute. So I will take a moment to say that this is where, if you are conducting any sort of M&A, core concept, and this is a concept that I taught for some time when I was a consultant and a lecturer with Credo Venture, is you focus on whether you're acquiring a small business, whether you're exiting, whether you're doing a joint venture, You got to focus on life after the deal. Life after the deal is the emotional, cultural, operational integration that if you are wise, well, you will put those binding terms in your closing documentation. You don't leave it for after the fact. What a lot of people do is they rush to close a deal and only focus on economic terms. And then they say, we'll leave rest to figure out later because we're all family now. Anybody who says to you, oh, we're a family now, they're full of shit and you should run. That is a red flag. I'm telling you, that's a red flag in M&A. Anybody who says that, like, we have a policy. I remember we were in London when I probably first said this. It was like you, me, Jeff, Wolf, and all this. I was saying, look, we're going to implement a policy in our company. We're going to say, I want to hear soft ass shit like, oh, we're a family. And everybody's shocked that I'm saying this. I got my brother, my business partner, our analyst is my cousin, and Sean's like a brother to us, or literally an adopted brother. When you introduce the concept of family into an environment like this, you allow for complacency and compromise. And that's not acceptable. What we are is a high performance team. High performance team means teammates have their role. They have specific execution for the play. We all stay in our lanes. We all run the play according to whatever role we were assigned. And we're a high performance team. I bring that up. Focus on life after the deal. Anybody advances this rainbows and sunshine concept of we're a big happy family, run, yellow flag. You should optimize your due diligence.
Given advice that take home, and people listening out there on the recordings are going to be able to hear that too. I do want to mic to Sal. She had a question. Sal,
you still here?
How you guys doing?
I can hear you.
There's my man.
Hey, Nitty. Sal.
Great advice as always, Nitty. Thank you. You can start a little bit with us on some of the M&A that we're doing. And Nitty, I like to tell you that we've got 5 separate acquisitions going right now at the same
time. I'm so proud of you. That's amazing.
I appreciate that. More importantly, I wanted to ask you a question. I've known you for a couple years, and nothing gets Nitty, like you could see it in his face, more excited where when he's talking about a business where he sees potential.
Yes.
My question is, now you're going all in on this company that is high frequency trading, you're not getting to touch the actual companies that you're dealing with. Do you see a situation where you're going to use this technology to actually work with businesses directly so you can impact those businesses? Like a business like us?
Yeah, that's a really solid question. And it just shows that you really understand my soul. So first off, I want to deeply thank you for sharing that publicly because it shows how much you understand me. I appreciate that, brother. So I'll tell you that with this high frequency trading firm, there are a couple plays that allow us to impact entrepreneurs and scale up stage companies. One is we have invited because of our regulatory status, we would serve as a treasury management solution for a number of companies that have excess cash on their balance sheet and want to deploy it in a structure that would realize high yield and not have a long-term lockup. I'll speak to this. We, as a fund manager, take zero management fee, which is unusual. We take zero management fee because we say we make money when you make money to our investors. So we're aligned in that regard. We also offer a 12-month soft lockup. We do have a minimal penalty if someone were to withdraw within 12 months. But we say, okay, give us 30 days notice. You want out? No problem. You can get out. So we are working with some of the early LPs that want to come into our pipeline, advancing exactly this. They say, look, we want to put money into the market, but just investing in money markets or index or whatever is not going to really put our money to work. But if they come with us, they could unlock, just like we are planning on doing, using our excess treasury internally with the GP to fund continued R&D and scaling up of the core solutions and technology that we're doing in CrowdPoint, like the energy grid optimization work, data centers that we're landing contracts for internationally, and so on. So we would use our treasury for the same manner to continue that brick and mortar touch that entrepreneurship has. And so that's one element. The other
is that we got to have a lunch. I got to catch you up on some really interesting architectures that we've advanced for our overall ecosystem. As I shared, Excite is within the companies that my brother and I and our business partners have. Excite is meant to be our treasury management and capital creation vehicle. We have a deployment and holding company structure that we are using to incubate and continue to conduct our M&A with more of our quote-unquote brick-and-mortar place.
Wow, amazing. And for sure, I'm like half the audience. I'm only catching about maybe 50% of what he actually means. But that's part of the excitement of it. Lifelong learning, right?
Yeah, it really is. Yeah, Sal, you have a good point. Nudie's always seems to be the smartest person in the room. It's really an honor to have you here today and listen to you talk. You know, you're changing the world. You really are. The future of trading, energy. It's exciting that our audience is able to even ask you questions. It's great.
No, thank you so much. It's such an honor to be on and really spend this evening with people I care about. So I appreciate that. And I'm really grateful for the opportunity.
Did anyone else have a question? I know we're getting near the end of our episode.
Lisa had her hand raised. I don't know if she does.
Go ahead, Lisa.
But you know me, I'm really geeking out on this conversation. So part of me has a question that's like, when you're attacking the issue of power, I was just curious if you have ever explored hydropower in any capacity and what that looks like for you as a person in the water industry. That's where my passion is.
Yeah, it's a play that we're actively exploring and integrating for some of the microgrid-enabled data centers that we're working on in Latin America. If you have a solution that can generate consistent high-yield power, I'd love to chat with you about it.
Thank you so much. This has been amazing today. Really enjoyed this.
My pleasure.
And amazing. And credit, we had some rocket launchers. We have rocket launchers tonight. So I know I saw Stephanie. So thank you for that, for launching that sucker for us.
I was trying to butter Nitty up so I get invited to that lunch with him and Steph.
We've been meaning to do the double D. I'll text you and we'll do something, you, me, Sal, and Jess.
Can we do triple rent? I would like to go.
Heck yeah. The more the merrier.
Let's make it a chatter party. Everybody in the room, join us.
Yeah.
Why not?
Thank everyone. As Macy has mentioned, we have a feature on this particular app where people can send tips or Rocket Cash. We appreciate everyone for their patience and hanging in there. We want to thank each and everyone. I think Nelson, Stephanie, we also have Lauren that was putting a few rockets in there. I hope I got everyone, but we appreciate everyone for showing up for our podcast every Tuesday. I just felt smarter in this hour, just being in the conversation. It's that saying that you're as good as the five people that you surround yourself with. Well, we have over 50 people that came in at one point or another in this room, and we all got smarter just from your conversation. I just felt like I just walked out of Harvard or MIT. So thank you.
Well, you're so sweet. My brother happened to get his master's in AI from Harvard, and our chief scientist went to MIT. I give credit to them for teaching me everything I know about the technology.
He's definitely got a great team over there, obviously. Yeah. The top people in the country, if not the world.
Yes,
I do want to ask you one last question before you go. What do you hope your legacy is with all of these things that you have going on right now? What do you hope your legacy is, not just in investing, but in tech, entrepreneurship, and life? Do you have some thoughts on that?
I thought a lot about legacy when preparing myself to be a good husband and an eventual dad and all that. Without getting too emotional about it, the legacy I want is that my people remember me for saying that I always showed up for them and I always deliver.
I think that you have already shown that to be true. Even today, under duress of your earlier endeavors. I don't know if people caught that in the beginning, but he had his wisdom teeth taken out and it still came today to be on our podcast and let us know about all of the exciting things happening at Excite. Anybody have any last thoughts in the audience?
Nitty, you are just cool and genuine. Genuine is the word. You meet somebody like this, he's true to his word.
Podcast, and
you only need to spend 30 seconds with the man to figure out that he's the real deal. And your brother, Raj, he's cool too. It was nice to meet your family. Just looking forward to many times together. Appreciate you.
Thank you so much.
You meet somebody like
this. Make sure you guys share this around, because several of you have said this is, it's like a master class in understanding both trading's probabilities and quantum all in one. Fantastic job, Nitty. Thank you,
brother.
Host Wendy and Macy and Credit. Thank you, guys. Great job.
Thank you, John. I do want to let you guys know that we'd have replays of our show on Spotify, all the normal platforms where you would find podcasts, as well as YouTube and X. So you can catch the replay if you missed any part of this interview. There's a lot to be said during this interview, so I encourage you to do that and follow us on those channels. Nitty, where can they find you?
And we need to thank our tech team, Paul and Nigel and Dan, that's helping us stream on the platforms. Go ahead, Wendy.
Yes, always thank you to our tech team. We could not do it without them, who help us every single week so we can focus on our guests, and they make sure that all the tech side is happening. We're streaming live to other platforms. Thank you, Paul, Nigelon, and Dan. You can follow them if you hit their profile circles here. Thank you to our sponsors once again, Smarter Aircraft, the next generation of private aviation investments, smarteraircraft.com, and William and Harry Golf, luxury brand exotic golf shoes, williamandharry.com. We appreciate your sponsorship. Nitty, I hope you feel better. I know that you've got that beautiful wife to get back to. Tell her.
Thanks. To answer your question, if anybody wants to connect with me, I reluctantly got back on LinkedIn. I absolutely abhor that platform, but I'm back on LinkedIn, so feel free to drop me a message there. Or on Instagram, I put my screen name in the chat here, but my screen name is just my first name dot last name, so it's nithab.akfair. Or you can get me on X, which is nithab_NUA. So Nithab is spelled NADAB. Akhtar is AKHTAR.
Thank you for bringing that up, and be sure to check it out in the chat. And again, thanks, Nelson, the creator of this app, for coming in today and for giving us the opportunity to have this great app. I mean, it's awesome, right? How do you like the app?
I think it's great. It's pretty easy to use. That was the thing that I liked, is it's intuitive. I would say one suggestion might be when there's invitation, if there's a URL that could link instead of the image, because that's when it's not as clear for guests to join. If there's a URL to join the room, that would probably be ideal.
Well, we will definitely pass that along. Thank you for coming on the show today. Thank you, John, and other people that came in, Sal and Stephanie and our regular audience, Lisa and McGinnis. We appreciate your support. And we will see you guys next Tuesday at 7. Thank you.
Let's do one picture. Let's do one picture. Here we go. Yeah. Ready? All right. Just so that nobody's eyes are closed. You know, it's the weirdest. But anyways, we got a good picture. We'll send that off.
Thank you.
Ready?
Okay, bye.